This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
That there is the sound of Mr.
Going?
Glyn Lavender. One half of Shudders Inc. Welcome to episode 566. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com. And I think Glyn is relaxed.
Mani padme
You what?
Mani padme
What's that?
It's a relaxation meditation. Mani padme
Okay.
Es misto ite, es misto si requiem.
Right.
That's Monty Python, the Holy Grail, and the monks sing that, and they whack themselves in the head with a big chunk of wood.
Excellent, excellent. How have you been otherwise?
Otherwise, I've been me.
Right. Well, that's a good
you
thing.
You know, and you'd be one of the few who think so.
Right. Okay.
I've been my normal, mostly obnoxious self.
Right.
So I think nothing changes really. Yeah. And yourself? Has it been 2 weeks? Is it?
I think it's been at least two, if not three.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you tell me, though, Bruce,
what
was the overwhelming influx of messages from our last episode when I took over and managed? How much better did we do?
We got no feedback at all.
None. So status quo is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Do you know my mate, what's his name? My mates Cam and Brendan started a photography podcast.
Yeah. These are the guys from Tassie.
Well, no, one's in Melbourne, one's in Tassie.
Okay.
And they're now the number one photography podcast in Australia.
Is that right?
Oh, no, I like this. The number one Australian photography podcast.
Right.
I don't think we're even in the top 10. And we've been doing it like 300, 400, 500, 600 episodes more than them. And we're not even a solid number twos. Which is... Kind of sad, you know. I think it's because they do the video thing,
right?
Yeah, they do the YouTube video thing, and but they're younger and more attractive, and no one wants to see us.
No, that's right.
To answer your question properly, I've been okay, but a bit of a struggle today with a migraine. But you know, the show must go on, as they say in the classics.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm here, and I'm my ever delightful self.
Excellent. And do we know what triggered the migraine?
No, I get them from time to time. It's just those things, you know, it just comes on. My wife had one on Saturday by chance, weirdly enough. But hers are kind of weird in that her vision starts to go. Ooh. And that's like the first indicator, even before she feels sick, her vision starts to close in.
Oh, no.
As she was driving the kids off to a careers fair.
Yeah, right.
And to quickly turn the car and drive home, try and get home before her vision went completely. You know?
Wow.
That was a bit disconcerting for her, and I was out running a workshop. I was out running my Understanding Your Camera workshop for the first time in about 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, right.
I ran it. Yeah, and you know what? About a quarter of the way in, I remembered why it's been 6 or 7 years.
Right.
Because it's bloody hard work, Bruce. I'm telling you, I'm not used to that. You know?
Okay.
Here's the weird thing about it. You know, I had a very small group. I only had three people. You know, I had two people pull out the day before with COVID,
right?
Which is joyful. So down to three people. One came to my last workshop, my natural light portrait workshop, saying, "Well, yeah, if you could do that, why are you coming to this one?" And I know another one's been to my workshops in the past, and you know, she's a camera club member and all this, and both of them are camera club members. I think, well, why are either of them coming to this workshop? And then this other lady I've never met before, and she came along, and she was she's also like a third SLR, so it's not like even a first camera,
right?
And this is like the absolute dead basic. Oh, what's the shutter speed? What's an aperture? What's an ISO? I don't know. All those kind of things, yeah. And so I was trying to make them unlearn some of the just horrendous things that they had learned,
yeah.
And get them back to just fundamentals. And to the point where one lady said, who's been shooting for years, goes, "Oh, I never knew what shutter speeds did. I'm going to start using them now. This is a woman who's been in the camera club system for years.
Wow.
I mean, years. And it's like, oh. And that's why, but this is why it's hard to teach, because, yeah, how do you teach stuff that you assume basic knowledge? Not for the sake of camera. You assume that you're not. That I'm not teaching these people something new, so I'm not sure what to teach them, because you assume they know this stuff. Yeah. If they don't know this stuff, what else am I saying that is going over their heads?
Yeah.
Because I'm assuming that even at least the terminology is understandable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So that could be what triggered the migraine, just a few days delayed. It was bleeding hard work.
I must say,
it might be a while before I run another one.
On a related note,
yeah,
I will confess, this is not the first camera that this has been the case with for me. But, you know, I've now had my A7 III for 4.5 years.
Yeah.
Or 3.5. I don't know. One or the other.
Quite a while.
And, yeah, exactly. And you just
learned how to turn it on.
You would think that by now I would be really comfortable with all of it.
No.
And
I wouldn't.
Over the last couple of weeks, I sat down and was looking at what functions I had mapped to the various buttons on the back of the camera that you can customize, and completely went back to square one and just remapped everything. And so now I've got to sort of get used to where I've put things now, but
yeah.
Have now put things that I think are related in a some kind of a sense, all close together, and they are: which focus area am I using?
Yeah.
Which focus mode am I using?
Yeah.
And which what was the other one? See, there you go. See, I still haven't actually.
Is it like continuous or single shot focus?
No, so that's a physical button on the body of the camera. Exposure mode, something. Oh man, I can't believe I just blanked on it. But yeah, like you would think that, like, within the time I've spent with this camera, that I would already have all this stuff kind of sorted out, and it just occurred to me, you know, I didn't know how to get to those three things quickly.
Oh wow!
And yeah, and so I've sort of mapped them into, you know, buttons that are quicker and easier to get to.
Okay. Which makes sense.
So that I can have more readily accessible access to those functions.
Stuff that's important. Yeah. I wasn't being facetious when I said I didn't expect you to know, because I've looked at the menus and these things. There's a bazillion bloody features.
Absolutely.
I mean, why 99% of them are there, I've got no idea. I mean, it seems to get in the way of photography. I know that much.
Right.
You're talking about
the Sony menu as opposed to the Canon.
But even all the cameras, to be honest, Bruce. Right. There's just so much on them these days that is you need a degree just to learn how to turn the thing on. Just about, there's that many features on them. I mean, I wouldn't know I've been using the Canon's ecosystem for forever.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know what 90% of the features are.
Yeah,
90%.
Right.
Yeah,
I guess it's like a car, you know, that you can get in and drive it with a basic quantity of knowledge, but if you want to actually pop the bonnet and start, you know, being a mechanic, then you really need to dive that much deeper into the manual. And I guess cameras are to a certain extent like that.
Forget the opening the bonnet, dude, or the hood. It depends where you come from. I was, by sheer chance, I was sitting in my car this morning, warming the car up, waiting for the kid to come out to take it to school.
Yeah.
And I looked down on the driver's door where you've got the little controller for your mirrors.
Yep.
Yeah, you got the right, you can toggle right or left, and then you got the little joystick, so you can move them up and down. And then below that is the door open, door locked buttons. So yes. Kind of all the, but above that, there's this other button I've never seen before. I'm going, never seen that before. Wonder what that is. So I pressed it, Bruce. I pressed it.
Yeah.
And it closes the mirrors even whilst the car's running.
Yes, right.
But I'd never seen that button. I've never even seen it before, Bruce.
And how long have you had this car now? You've had this car a couple of
years or so. Yeah. And it's not a small button, I might add.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at going, oh, I wonder what that is. And it even had like a little picture on it of what it does.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what that picture meant.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, until I pressed the button, then the picture made sense. But it's like, oh, I see what it does. It's like, My Lord. So you don't even have to pop the hood. Yeah. You just, but even like, even on the infotainment system, you know, they've got so many features on those things that it's like, yeah, kind of insane on cars. So, yeah, cameras are like the woman who came to the Natural Light Workshop a couple of weeks ago, who someone had programmed her camera for ease.
Right.
And even on manual, you couldn't change the shutter speed above 1/8 of a second.
What?
Yeah, on full manual, you couldn't alter the camera's settings because the camera had been programmed by someone to make things easier.
How bizarre.
And she's showing me this little diagram. Oh, this is for clear photos. And I'm going, what? It's a clear photo. Yeah. And she couldn't understand what the guy had done. She didn't. And she had two of them. And they'd both been set up. And both of them couldn't function. Yeah. Fortunately, I couldn't find on her newer camera of the two models. She had two Olympus models.
Yeah.
Of one of them, she had the newer one, the one she wanted to use. I could not find the reset button to reset the functions. I went through the menus about 14 times,
yep,
whilst everyone else is waiting, mind.
Yeah, right.
At trying to reset the damn camera. I figured if we reset it back to factory default,
yeah,
she's going to lose all these controlled settings that someone set up for her, some computer guy apparently.
Yeah.
But she's a camera's going to function.
Yeah.
Yeah. Couldn't even find that.
Wow.
In the massive. So, but in her older one, it was fairly obvious. You know, it was kind of where I expected it to be.
Yeah.
And reset that camera, then it was all working fine. But it's like, this is it. You have all this. I mean, you can program all the buttons to do all the things.
And yeah,
unless you really know what you're doing, if you press a button by mistake, yeah. Even like my Canon 5D Mark IV, one of them at the moment, the little red light that shows that it's reading from the memory. You know, you press, yes, the button, take a couple of photos, it for a second says it's reading. It's flashing continually. And I'm going, well, I wonder what that is.
Yeah, right.
Turns out there might be an issue with the card.
Right.
But, you know, I'm going, well, I don't know what that means. Yeah, that's never happened before.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, there is so much on them. And it does tend to get in the way of photography because all you want to do is go out and take some pictures and you want to use your main couple of features.
Yep.
And I kind of guess the focus points, I guess. But, yeah, I was reading some camera manufacturer's post the other day. Someone was saying, oh, on your next version of firmware, can you include motorbike and bicycle detection as separate features, please?
What?
So it's not okay to even have just, you know, movement. It wants, yeah. And you've got animal eye detection and, yes, human eye detection.
Yeah.
Are they that different? Like, why? Yeah. Why do you need different detections for different eyes? I mean, I don't know. It just seems to be. And I guess, look, I have to say, last time I was using a Sony with eye detect focus, I did find it easier to get the eyes in focus. So yeah, the technology has its benefits.
Yeah.
I would like to be able, this is something I've said all along with digital cameras, I'd like to be able to turn off features.
Right.
I'd like to, in the menu, be able to go, no, just hide. You know, you can do like in don't display. Just wink it off. And then I can always, you know, bring back by like a button on the top, show all features again or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
But I'd like to be able to go turn off all the things in the menu that I'm never going to use.
Yep.
So my menu's got like 10 things on it that maybe I am going to use. And as you say, be able to access quicker and easier because they're in the spot that I want,
yeah,
you know. And, then, you know, there may be even ways of, on my custom tab 47, be able to do all that. But I want the first bloody tab just to have the things I want to use.
And I think, and this is only me speaking as a Sony user, but I feel like that's why they give you so many programmable buttons. Is so that you can dive into the menu and go, okay, what are the features that I, for my style of shooting, want to be able to access quickly? And so you then map those things to the buttons that make sense to you.
I might not want to access them quick. I might be things I use once in a blue moon, but I don't want to have to go finding where in all the 47 menu screens was
it. Yep,
I want, at some point, maybe I might use that. Let's put that over there. Yeah, you know, it's like having a favorites folder on your computer. Yeah, this is the stuff that sounds pretty cool, and maybe one day the inspiration will get to me, and I'll give it a shot. You know, but it just seems. But I'm old, so it doesn't matter. It's like they're not made
with the A7 III. It has a fantastic intervalometer mode.
Yeah,
and you can map the intervalometer settings
to
a custom button. but you cannot map the intervalometer turn on, turn off button. It's like, did someone just overlook that when they were writing the firmware?
God.
Because I find that really annoying. And as you say, it's one of those features you don't use it all of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when I do want to go to it, I've got to go into the menu to find it. And I'm constantly paging through going, oh, Christ, where is it? Where is it? Where is it?
Yeah, yeah. And you go past it 13 times.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like all video – I'd like to be able to turn off all video functions on my camera. Because in my current talk, my photos are shit, I don't know why I bother. I show a whole series of photos where I'm just crap, you know, out of focus, overexposed, underexposed, all sorts of stuff. And then I put up one, knocked it onto video mode by mistake. And I do that all the bloody time. You know, I accidentally knock it onto video mode.
Yep.
And so when I press the button, instead of taking the photo, it starts the video. So I lose the shot, you know. And I'd like to be able to turn that off so I don't do it. You know, if it's something I'm never going to use, and once again, you can bring it back up if at some stage it floats your boat, you want to give it a shot.
Yep.
But just for simplicity's sake, you know, turn it all down would be nice. But, you know, what can you do, you know? But yeah, so I had my I got my car back from repairers last Friday too. It was a Friday, okay. Yeah. But after snapping telephone pole in half. So,
oh yes,
yeah. So that's all back from repairers and
nice.
Oh, it's strangely, supremely smooth operation. The least hassle you could ever imagine. It's like drive in. Here's your hire car, sir. We'll call you when it's done. Come back, all done. Here's your keys. Get to take the hire car keys back off you. Thank you very much. Here's your paperwork. Off you go.
Wow.
And it was like, didn't have to say, do anything. There's no hassles, no arguing, no pointing stuff out. There was even a little bit of a ding on one side of the car, opposite side where I'd clipped a pole very slightly. They fixed that too.
Wow.
You know, and it's like probably charged like the insurance company like a wounded bull for it, but I don't care. It's done.
Yep.
But it's like, it was just like, that was really bizarre. That was my highlight of the last 2 weeks is getting the car back. Because I've been driving a Volkswagen Touareg or something.
Oh, okay.
And oh my God, what a piece of crud that is! You know,
oh, really?
Sorry for anyone that owns one. Oh my God, it's just you can't accelerate in it. It's front wheel drive, and if you accelerate, it just jerks, chugs the wheels, and you kind of bounce in on the spot.
So is it traction control kicking in?
I don't know what's not kicking in. I don't know what it is or isn't kicking in, but it's like the torque of the engine's too high for the front wheels.
Yeah, right.
And it kind of just lurches and staggers rather than smoothly accelerates. Wow. And I'm used to using it driving a constant four-wheel drive, and you put your foot down and you just go. You know, you just go.
Yeah.
And so, when you're trying to zip out into traffic quickly,
yeah,
you pull out. And they're all barreling down at you like 70 kilometres an hour. And you're just going, J-j-j-j-j-j-j. So I'm kind of glad to be got rid of that. But I went to a photo exhibition on the weekend.
Oh, okay.
I never did. My mates Franco and Annie, lovely, lovely people I've known most of my life. I used to work with Franco in the camera stores back in the very early 80s, all the way into the 90s, I think, for a long time. He's like my older brother.
Okay.
But they live in a little beach area, a suburb of Victoria, of Melbourne, and where there's like a kind of like a grasslands. It's a bit bushy. It's a scrubby. It's kind of salt flats. All that kind of stuff. It's kind of reclaimed wasteland basically, but it's got a huge diverse range of snakes and lizards and eagles and hawks and birds and of all sorts of stuff. And they get migratory species come through as well. So they go out a couple of times a week for a walk and take photos of the stuff they see.
Right.
And they joined a Facebook group of a bunch of other people to do that too. So they put on an exhibition of people's photos of all the wildlife in that little area. And it was very cool. Yeah, I went down and saw birds I didn't even know we had in Victoria. You know, it's like, yeah, seriously cool looking species that, like in urban Melbourne, that you would just never assume. So that was kind of nice. It was really lovely to see a bit of community around sharing photos, not judging photos, you know what I mean? Yeah. Just like, sharing the stuff that they enjoy doing. So I took the wife and kids down, and I met my mother and father-in-law. My father-in-law's a keen photographer.
So where did he hold the exhibition?
It was at a community centre in Altona. It ran for 3 weekends, and it's an arts and community centre. So in one room, they had some artists displaying some painting work that they'd done, which was pretty darn cool too. And then they had another the room just for that, all their photos for, and there was like probably 15 people displaying their photos.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, it was really kind of really like that idea of, you know, a group of people getting together and sharing a common theme exhibition. I thought it was really, really kind of nice.
Awesome.
So so that was good. Yeah, that was a thing involved in photography.
Yeah.
That whilst it's not something I'm going to go out and do, but I'm not against it. I would go out and take photos of birds. I have no problem with that. But I'm not going to exhibit that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy seeing that, so that was kind of cool. And then this Thursday, I'm going out to another club talk in a place called Coldstream, one of the coldest parts of Victoria. And it's been pretty bloody cold down here this last week or two.
So. Right.
Let's see what kind of weather they put on for me. It snowed down to 500 metres on the weekend down here, so that's pretty low.
Yeah.
So it's been pretty chilly. Mm-hmm. We might say. So I'm looking forward. I just put a little promo up on Facebook, and I'm being derided, Bruce. I'm being derided by people.
For what?
For my post.
What was your post?
Well, all I said was, this Thursday evening at 7:30, I'm speaking at the Yarra Rangers Photographic Society.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be regaling them with tales of how awesome I think I am. If you're in the area, come along and I can tell you too. And I included a photo, and it says photo as both proof and also for attention. And then it's like, do they have earplugs? Your awesome self-promotion has no bounds. If I show up, can I get an autograph? Someone said. To which I replied, try going home without one. I'm putting them under everyone's windscreen wipers in the car park, you know. It's like this. I think it was, it reminded me of remember the movie Notting Hill?
Yes, I can't remember if I ever watched it.
Yeah, Julia, but he owns a little bookstore, a little travel bookstore, and he's obviously sells some. He had done his own books, he sold some of his own books,
yeah.
And he recommends his book to Julia Roberts, the character. She comes in the store, and she goes, "Oh, it's signed." And he goes, "Yeah, try getting an unsigned one; they're worth more." It's kind of the same philosophy. Right?
Nice.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. It'll be hopefully a good bit of fun.
Cool.
Oh, and I did one other thing to do with photography this week.
Yeah.
I met with the Atomos people.
Oh, okay. Who do the Ninja?
All the Atomos Ninja monitors and all that, which you may use, that sort of stuff, and people may use that in your fields.
In the video world?
Yeah, and I'm going to be doing some stuff with them.
Right.
On a new product that's coming out at the end of this month, which we can't talk about yet because it's under an NDA.
Okay.
But it may change the way I teach forever.
Wow. Interesting.
That when they approached me, and I said, well, I don't do any video. It's no use. And they said, well, oh, we kind of like you. We'd still like to do something with you. And I said, well, let me have a think.
Mm.
And then I came up with this idea, and I went back to them and said, you know what? I think this could change the language, or give me a whole new language to talk photography to people with, this product.
Wow.
And it's going to give me a whole new vocabulary and training method for people when I'm shooting.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I'll talk about that in maybe the next episode, because it'll be released by then. Oh, it's released tomorrow, actually, funnily enough. So, yeah, I can. Well, this isn't coming out till next week, is it?
This isn't coming out till Sunday, so that's.
I'll talk about it now then.
Yeah.
Basically, they're just releasing a new monitor for, you know, cameras, obviously. Yeah. Much, much, much thinner. It's basically not much bigger than a mobile phone.
Right.
And it's really it's just a monitor to the top of your camera, so people can use that rather than their screen.
Yep.
Or, and it's nothing unusual for what the video crew have been using for years, and people have been using this sort of stuff. But you can control all the camera and all the features and all the focus and all the highlight. This thing can control for especially things like Sony cameras, every possible type of video function you would ever need, I would imagine.
Yep.
But of course, I don't do any of that. But I came up with this idea that if I can mount it high enough on my hot shoe, so when I've got my camera to my eye to shoot, people can see what I'm seeing.
Yep.
I can talk what I'm seeing and how I close. I can talk about the look at the difference between this and move half a centimeter, and this is why I'm doing this. This is what's important. So it gives me a whole new conversation around.
Familiar with a company called Small Rig?
Yeah, I know Small Rig. Yeah, they approached me, wanted me to be their distributor.
Right. Because they've got the kinds of gadgets that you would need that would allow you to elevation above your hot shoe or your cold shoe, hot shoe. Yeah.
Yeah, hot shoe, yeah.
Yeah, because I've actually got one of their little things, it's like a kind of like figure eight, like a ball head, but on both ends of the
thing. That's exactly it. Yep,
and use that when I want to shoot video. And I want to use my external audio recorder and mount it on top of the camera.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the beauty of that double-jointed ball head thing is that it allows me to obviously mount one end on the hot shoe, but then pivot it far enough away so that the audio recorder isn't banging me in the forehead when
perfect.
I'm trying to...
Perfect, yeah, exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly what I need.
Yeah.
Send me a photo of it or a link to it at some point.
Yeah, for sure.
But Small Rig last year wanted me to be their distributor for some reason.
Yeah, right.
I'm going, but guys, I'm... A, I don't know anything about video. Kind of weird. B, I don't distribute squat. I distribute bullshit. That's about it. You know, it's not a lot of link between what I do and what you want me to do. You know? But yeah, that's. And I just think this is being able to, in the moment, show.
Yeah.
Nuance,
yes.
Which to me is everything, is just a really, really fascinating concept, and I'm a bit excited about it. I think it could be really interesting, and I mean, cause I'm always trying to share more and more and say, now, how do I get this information across to people, but be able to do it? It's like when you're shooting tethered, and people can see, but they're not normally getting a live feed as well.
They're
getting
tethered just
the frozen image,
the shot a second after it was taken, kind of.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah, so this will be able to actually see, you know, every nuance of what I'm doing, and it will force me as well to understand why I'm doing what I'm doing and explain it better, because you're thinking about why you're doing stuff to explain it to somebody else rather than just doing it and then showing the photo.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited about that. That could be a nice little change up. You know, keep things interesting.
It does make me think, though. I've seen lots of YouTube creators who use the HDMI out from the camera to go into things like an Atomos recorder to capture, you know, when they're navigating the menu of the camera and things like that. So you're actually getting a pure rendition of that menu system on your computer screen. Could you not take the HDMI out of your camera into like a television screen?
Mine doesn't have HDMI out for starters, so no.
Okay.
But I could, but that's not going to help me when I'm walking down the street with people.
Ah, true. Fair enough.
So mine is the mobility of it. And a small video battery runs almost an entire day with this thing.
Yeah.
So you know, be able to take it around anywhere as we walk the streets and be able to explain every scenario, I think is pretty darn cool. So so that's something to look forward to in the next week or two. And I'm hoping to get one before my next natural light workshop to give it a test.
Yeah, right.
So I'll keep you informed of how that's going. And
lovely.
But I think it could be an interesting little concept. So it's nothing new, I said, to have a monitor on top of your camera. It's just that this one's so small and light that it's not a pain to have on there. And as a non-video guy, it's just I think it opens up a whole new an avenue that I've never seen used before. I've never seen anyone doing this.
Yeah,
as an educator go. So you know, if we could promote a little bit of that for Atomos, they can maybe get, you know, more photo educators doing that kind of stuff as well. And I thought it was a pretty good idea I had for once.
Mm.
Since 2005, Shutters Inc. has been a labor of love. But beyond the time required to produce it, there is also a financial commitment. If you find value in the podcast and would like to help keep the servers running, hit up the Patreon link, which is in the show notes. Even a couple of dollars a month will help. Much appreciated. Now, back to the podcast.
Yeah, and that's it. Anything from your end of the world?
Well, the last two or three weeks, however long it's been, I have been just one image a night kind of thing, just sitting and reprocessing, you know, my 100 best images project.
Excellent.
And as I've been working through these images, every now and again I'll go, ooh, I remember an image of X that I shot and it's not in this collection. And so I'll go and search for that image, add the top 100 tag to it, then go back to my collection of what is now 101 images and go, okay, what's the weakest image here? And ditch one.
Wow.
So I'm constantly, you know, moving goalposts, but I'm enjoying the process of going back and reprocessing these images.
Fascinating.
You know, with now, what have I, 8 years of experience with Darktable.
Yeah.
And really am happy with the developed versions that I'm now getting that I think are much better than, you know, what I've come up with in the past. So
how awesome. What a great idea.
Yeah. So I'm...
How many photos are you in, do you think?
Oh, I'm probably only about 15 or 20 images in.
Wow, yeah.
But I'm okay with that. I'm not trying to rush it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, yeah. I figure if I just do one image a night...
Here's a question for you. Yeah. Off the cuff and unscripted and unprepared.
Like the rest of the podcast.
Yeah. Is it making you think of different ways to shoot? Is it opening up ideas or thoughts or going, oh, and here's the thing that I find from myself. I often see an old photo go, oh, I used to love shooting that way, and I haven't shot that way or that sort of viewpoint in so long. I'm going to start doing that again because I really enjoyed what I did there. And because you're always trying out new things, you're going to leave stuff behind.
Right.
Are you finding anything when you're going through images that's sort of inspiring anything new?
I must admit, no, I haven't had that thought as yet, but that doesn't mean
dullard,
that I won't.
You absolute dullard. Well, okay, then as a variation on that, then as you slowly curate your 100, it'll be interesting to see if there's a theme to that viewpoint, lens choice, subject matter, time of day, you know, what's the overarching themes, or are there more than one theme? Is your top 10 all not similar but thematically linked and stuff? I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I've looked at the 100 images that I've got and they sort of run the full gamut of the stuff that I shoot. So there's family stuff in there, there's travel stuff in there, there's some of my shoots with models, there's some landscape stuff, there's, you know, one or two stitched panoramas. So I've sort of covered the entire genre list of the type of photography that I do. So it's not all just one style of stuff, like they're not all just from my model shoots or not all just travel or
So I would have to say, just thinking about it, I remember early days of me being on this podcast, you were very much known for your stitch panos. That was kind of your thing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to be a thing. And I don't know. I don't remember last time we discussed you doing much in the way of specifically going out to shoot a pano.
Yeah, probably the last time I did one was a couple of, I wouldn't say the last time I shot one was a couple of years ago. I shot a few actually whilst I was in Canada and Alaska.
Yeah.
But I did actually do a three-part video series on my YouTube channel. And I did say at the time, I'm hesitant to do this because it requires using software other than Darktable, and I really don't want to pollute the channel. You know, I wanted the channel to stay pure Darktable, because if I'm bringing an audience in who are interested in Darktable, then don't then suddenly hit them with stuff that's not Darktable. But what had happened was I had been processing some multi-image pano stuff, and I had used an image or two in a previous video for Darktable. And then I had, you know, been bombarded with requests from my Darktable viewers going, can you explain your process for shooting multi-image panos? And so I said, look, I am going to do this three-part series where the first episode will be all about shooting the panorama. The second will be about processing the individual files for a consistent look. So we're prepping them for stitching.
Yeah.
And then the third one will be all about the stitching process. And so I made it clear right from the outset, you know, there's a little bit of Darktable involved, but there's also this other piece of software called Hugin. Yeah, and so I did this three-part series where I covered the whole thing from the shoot to the processing to the stitching and, yeah.
And how did it go down?
Oh, very well received.
Yeah.
People loved it. Certainly those people who had an interest in doing a multi-image.
Is that Hugin software free software as well?
Yes,
or is
it
that
is.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe there's an opportunity there to expect, because I know lots of people use, say, Lightroom and Photoshop, or Lightroom and Luminar, or Lightroom and Affinity. They use more than a crossover. Yeah, they can only do so much that they like in one software and they cross over. That maybe there's some ways of linking in some of your Darktable with some of the alternatives that to do stuff. Yeah, open up to Darktable and beyond kind of thing.
Yeah, like I said, I'm a little hesitant about polluting the content of the channel, though.
I understand, but I don't. If your process is to educate,
sure,
and you're motivated, and you're showing, this has been done in Darkroom, but I'm going out to this software for these reasons. You are educating and saying there's a benefit in using Darktable and this software in coordination with your Darkroom. Same way I use Luminar in conjunction with Photoshop.
Yep.
And I couldn't show people how I develop an image without showing them both.
Yep. Fair enough.
Because in Photoshop, I can only do X amount of what I do, and then I pop into Luminar to do Y, I don't know. I totally understand your reticence, but you're only giving people two-thirds of the picture if you're not showing them some of the other finishing stuff that you could do to it that's kind of outside the realm of a Photoshop or a GIMP or a Darkroom.
I guess the style of stuff that I have been doing mostly with the channel is just using Darktable to do everything, because it is such a competent piece of software that it has its weaknesses. Not going to defend it where it's not warranted. It has its shortcomings in places, but it is incredibly competent, and you can do 99% of what you want to do in that one piece of software.
So is Photoshop.
Yeah, exactly.
But I still use external.
Yeah.
there's still a time. As I said, there's a time and place. I mean, Photoshop stitches panos, as example. Yes. But I think external programs probably do it better. Yeah, dedicated programs probably do a better job than Photoshop does. Not that I do HDR, but I know Photoshop does HDR.
Yep.
But the look, it's like they have their vision of what a HDR image should look like.
Yep.
Versus different software may have quite a different take on it.
Yes.
About where its biases are and stuff, and everything from the Ratcliffe to the hardly even tell that it's been the HDR kind of thing. I just think it's interesting. I don't know many people who only use
one piece of software.
Piece of software. Yeah,
absolutely. Even in the Linux world, I mean, I know a lot of my viewers will say, I use Darktable for the processing, but I use Raw Therapy for the library management.
Oh, yeah.
I personally am quite happy with the library management that Darktable offers.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I totally
It's what you get used to sometimes, too, isn't it? Yeah, I know how to do this easily in this software. Why learn a new version when it does everything I need? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I'm enjoying the process of going back and revisiting a lot of these images.
Good to hear. I'm looking forward to seeing your end result.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah.
And it'll be nice to get them printed, because a lot of them, some of them have been printed in our travel photo books. I always produce photo book after our travels. Yeah. But a lot of the stuff, the stuff I've done with models and, my personal projects, a lot of that stuff's never been printed. So that'll be interesting.
I like the idea of curating everything into edition. First edition of Bruce. Yeah,
exactly.
And I guess it could be interesting too, if you do look at it that way as an additions, what are your next 100 images going to be like? Yeah, and and how long will they take? And do you still create like you created in the past where you got to 100 images in X amount of time? Will you even complete a second 100?
I guess it comes down to whether or not, you know, let's say you were going to take the approach of, I will revisit this in 2 years' time.
Yeah, yeah.
It would then be a case of, am I going to take the mindset of it has to be a fresh 100 images, or am I simply going to take whatever images are better in the last 2 years and replace that many from the original 100?
Not as much of a challenge. I just think the challenge for the next 100 is huge.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if I had to now produce my edition one of my top, my 100 images I like the most, I'm not sure I could produce a second 100. I'm not sure I'll take enough photos going forward.
See, it's the exact same quandary that you get with, you know, the Alanis Morissettes of the world, who come out with their debut album that is an absolute monster that sells 15 million copies worldwide. And then the pressure is on them to turn around a second album that's just as good in 12 months. And it's like, yeah, but you're overlooking the fact that they spent 10 years working on this debut album. You know, so I guess there is that aspect.
I generally don't know if I will produce another 100 images that I love. I don't know if I will shoot enough.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I can shoot 100 images, no problem at all.
Yeah.
But not 100 images that I would say match up to, equal or the previous 100. I don't know if I've got that in me, you know?
It's because of the time frame that those first 100 were shot.
Even over the next 20 years, Bruce, I'm talking. You know, okay. If I said, okay, I've got 10 years to produce 100 images, I'm not sure that's going to happen.
Mm. And in my own case, I would say it's going to come down to how often do I get out and shoot?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. The passion for shooting early days versus 20 years in or whatever is vastly different. And also the variety maybe of images that you're going to shoot in the second 20 years over the first 20 years may be vastly different. Because, you know, you're experimenting with so much in this first formative years that you've got a broad range of stuff and you kind of refine it down to, and then they can become a bit same old, you know. Mm-hmm. I applaud you for your doing the 100 images in itself. I don't know if I even have 100 images that I like enough that I've ever taken. I'm serious. I don't know if I could put together 100 images.
But the point is, you could find 100 images. It's a question of whether or not you're happy to exhibit the weaker end of that 100.
Well, the bottom 80. Funny. So, but it's fascinating stuff. It is. I mean, I look at my work and I go, yeah, to a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I'm not, because I'm not emotionally connected with my images.
Yeah.
It's like, well, who cares about that? I don't care about it. Why would anyone else sort of thing as well? You know? Yeah. There's not a lot of images that I'll go, that's why I don't think I've ever done an exhibition. I don't know if I could find 10 or 15 photos that I liked enough to want to enlarge and put on a wall. I don't know, you know. And as I say in my current talk, it's the joy is still in the doing more than the end result anyway.
Yeah.
So
just thinking about what you were saying about you think that's the reason you've never done an exhibition, maybe the crucial factor there is who chooses those images. Maybe if you were to let somebody else go through your collection of work, they would have no trouble finding 100 killer images.
Yeah.
And they might be images that don't necessarily resonate with you, as you said. Absolutely. Because you know, you're running workshops and whatever. But somebody else would look at it and go, this is an amazing body of work, Glenn. I can easily put together an exhibition with 100 great images here.
Yeah.
And you might go, whatever.
Meh. Yeah.
But
you're right. Yeah. The beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
That's it.
and other people, but that's the same, I guess, any art form, I guess you're your own worst critic, I guess.
Totally.
But it's also, I think there's a certain, especially because I talk about it, my images a lot, because I'm doing presentations all the time with my images. You do get bored of them.
Right.
Yeah, they're not like your children where you can put up with them for a long period of time. You've seen it enough times. Yeah, and it's like a musician. It's like, I've sung this song 100 times before we've even recorded it. And then I've got to go and sing it every time for God knows whatever eternity. And speaking of, just as an aside with music, years ago I was having a chat with my good mate Adam, who's a music nut, and we were discussing what is the perfect live concert he's heard. And we're trying to decide what makes a great live concert.
I'm thinking for him it would either be the Stones or Bruce.
Yeah, but what is, not so much the artist, but what is it about that performance that elevates, or what is it, what are you looking for in a performance that makes it good? And I said to him, what I want is musically to be perfection. It doesn't have to be exactly as recorded, but I want it to be pretty darn close. But then I want vocally to have more inflection, more humanity. Emotion. In it. Yeah, but more like I'm feeling this for the first time kind of stuff.
Yes.
And he gave me a CD that day to take back home with me.
A live album?
It was a live album, by chance, of the Counting Crows, who I kind of like.
Right.
It was a live in London where they're doing their entire August and everything after their first...
their breakthrough album.
I'm like one song in, and I've messaged him, this is the perfect concert.
Yeah, right.
Because it had all the... is that the vocals are so spot on to, my God, he's feeling this for the very... not 20 years of singing this song.
Yeah.
This is... I'm living every single word I'm singing.
Yeah.
But musically, it was 20 years of we've played this to... we can now play this with lived perfection, and heart and feeling. And it was just amazing coincidence. So it's the same kind of thing. You know, what are you looking for? And everyone's looking for something different,
Sure.
What are you looking for in an image that's going to make, which is why there's so much variety out there, I guess, why people shoot so many different things. But, I like crotchety old people. Not in real life, only in photos. Don't want to deal with them in real life. But some people couldn't stand to take a photo of a person. So the thing that makes something great for us is so vastly different. It's really quite amazing. I guess that's what makes art such a broad appeal.
Art.
Yeah, but gives it such broad appeal because she can be anything, I guess.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. All these deep and meaningful conversations. Do we have anything photographic to talk about, Bruce?
No, that was it.
I've got one thing.
What have you
just
got?
I even tried to bloody research for tonight. Couldn't find a bloody thing to talk about.
Same.
But I came across one thing about Tom Hanks' new movie coming up.
Right.
And the movie is called... it's called Here. In the entire movie, from Go to Woe, the camera is in exactly the same spot for the entire movie. It does not move once. There was one angle and one viewpoint for the entire movie.
Okay.
And then everything else is built and moves around that one viewpoint, which I thought was fascinating. You've had all these people who do these one takes, the scenes where they'll do uncut. Well, this is obviously going to have lots of cuts, but everything, the camera does not move for the entire show.
Wow.
And it's Robert Zemeckis.
Yep. Directors.
Is doing it, so he's pretty talented.
Yeah,
but it follows the history of one piece of land. So it's aiming at a piece of land, and what happens to that land over a couple of thousand years?
Oh, wow!
And most of it revolves around. It says it revolves around decades where the area is part of an American house owned by a couple played by Tom Hanks and Robin Wright, and as they age, but it's always the same viewpoint. And as the eras change, I think what a brilliant concept for me. I really want to see this because it's just.
I'm keen on seeing it.
It doesn't move. It doesn't zoom. Doesn't turn. It's 104 minutes long.
Wow.
And apparently, it's never been done in the history of cinema.
Okay, 1917 was a similar concept.
No, that was a one take. That was a one, and there was takes. They were just cleverly hidden.
Yes,
there were cuts.
Yeah.
But that's moving through multiple scenes.
Yes.
This is one angle.
I get it.
Looking at a lounge room. Yeah,
I'm saying it was a similar concept.
Following some guys walking through some fields, not quite the same.
And it was,
I get what you're saying.
And it was a bold
and audacious bit of filmmaking. I'll give it that. There were lots of cuts in 1917. Lots and lots of cuts, just all very cleverly
hidden. Same with Birdie, the Michael Keaton film.
Yes.
Which I absolutely hated. I didn't understand it one bit. But, you know, they tried to make out that that was all one take as well. But again,
well, that's art. Were just so if you don't understand it, Bruce, it's art.
That's right. So just some very cleverly hidden edits in that film.
I accidentally went to see Deadpool versus and Wolverine or versus Wolverine.
My wife dragged me to that on Sunday.
I went there by mistake. Well, I booked the kids in to see In-N-Out 2, which is a kids' animated cartoon.
Okay.
Because my youngest really wanted to see it. And they changed, so I booked it like a week and a half out, and they changed the movie that was showing at that slot.
Oh, no.
And it's only when we're sitting down in the cinema waiting and looking, there's a lot of adults here and not a lot of kids. And, of course, we're going from a Disney Pixar animated cartoon to every second word swearing and someone getting killed.
Yeah. Oh, so the kids got to see Deadpool, and
they did. And the one I was worried the most about was the 13-year-old, and she loved it to pieces. She insisted on watching Deadpool, and now she wants to watch Deadpool too. So she loved it.
I had zero interest in going to it. It's the kind of thing that Kath and Max would have sat down and gone to together. And I would have been quite happy to stay at home for 3 hours. But because Max is no longer living at home, it was up to me to go along with Kath. And I will admit there were a couple of laughable moments in it. The one that stuck out to me the best that actually had me literally laugh out loud was this scene where Deadpool, who is constantly breaking the fourth wall all the way through the movie, is talking about Wolverine, who up until this point has been wearing this costume, and he says he's normally shirtless, but since the divorce, he's kind of let himself go a bit. It was hilarious.
But do you know about their history, that Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman? So they've had an ongoing fake rivalry for years online. It's sort of hilarious.
Yeah.
And then to then see it happening in the movie, it's just killer.
It was good. I
enjoyed it. I don't watch superhero movies. I'm not into any. I don't like any of the Marvel stuff.
No.
But I do find them that there's enough humor. It's Canadian. Yeah, it's done by Canadians. It's got to be good, you know. Lovely people, the Canadians. So anyway, but yeah,
excellent.
I'm looking forward to seeing this here movie. I think it's going to be really interesting. I reckon.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
All right. Well, that should be it. I think we've waffled well and truly long enough.
Great to catch up.
I know. Shameless self-promotion.
That's it. And we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Bye, everyone. Thanks for all the input of the last episode. Love it.
Yes. See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to Shudders Inc. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuddersincpodcast.com.